harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fight side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting and talking down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Guy who claims he just don't believe in fact. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They live on milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. And they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fact inside of me. Yeah, walking on the fight inside of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a part of that key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be warned. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fight inside of me. Yeah, walking on. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. And you run it down my country, man. You walking on the fight inside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fight inside of me. And that's the same as this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and reviews for our people, and I'm going to go directly to a program I did last week with William Johnson of the American Freedom Party, Ken Givedan, our producer and coordinator, and special guest James Edwards, the longtime host of the radio program The Political Cesspool. And this is our ethnostate program, and that will take up the rest of the of this show tonight, and this is the ethnostate.
Hello everyone, this is William Johnson, chairman of the American Freedom Party, here with another edition of the ethnostate. We have with us today Ken Givedan, Paul Fromm, and James Edwards. So we're going to talk about a lot of interesting things today. And I'm trying to think of like a catchword or a byline that we should always start things with. I remember that when Walter Winchell did his opening, he would always say, "Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. North and South America and all the ships at sea." And you know, that was his catchphrase. And then you had that the guy from Harrison Keller or whatever his name was. He would always say, coming from Lake Wobegon, where everyone is better than average, or something like that. So I got to come up with some sort of neat, catchy phrase. But in any event, the first issue that I want to talk about is a scandal that has rocked Southern California. It has been big news all day long, and it broke today. And what it was is that when I was driving to work, you had the a prosecuting attorney for the district attorney in Boston, Massachusetts, came out and announced there was an indictment of 50 or so very well-connected people for college admission fraud. Have you guys heard about that?
I did hear about this, Bill, and I was a little surprised at how much attention it got from law enforcement. I mean, this has been something that apparently they've been tracking for quite some time. This was a very high profile, as you mentioned, the operation. And of those, and it was only about 40 or 50 people that I read that were implicated in this whole thing. Two of them happened to be fairly well-known actresses. Felicity Huffman, who's married to William H. Macy, who's actually a very good character actor. She's most famous for having appeared in the Desperate Housewives series. And then Lori Loughlin, who appeared most famously in the Full House series as Aunt Becky. Now, what they were alleged to have done, and I know that Felicity Huffman has already been arrested, this actress, Lori Loughlin, was in Europe. And they told her to turn herself in, that, you know, they've already got the warrant out for her. But basically what I saw was that in the case of one of them, again, allegedly, there was like a $15,000 contribution to some so-called charity, and the quid pro quo was, you know, we give you some money and you make sure that our kids get into USC, the University of Southern California. So I get that, you know, that's probably untoward, that that's going to be a fine, maybe even the kids would be expelled if they're still in college. That may have happened so long ago, they're already out. But I was a little surprised that they're going after these people hammer and tong and talking about, you know, issuing warrants and arrests and felonies and, you know, hard jail time. I mean, it's not something I would do, but it doesn't seem like that serious offense as far as I know. What am I missing here?
Okay, this is what I heard, and it's a lot bigger than that $15,000 payment by that one actress. What happened is there's some fellow who was well-connected in the sporting arena, I guess. He knew a lot of coaches, and he also ran a study company to help preparation to prepare people to take the ACT and the SAT for admission into colleges. And what he did is he set up his network, and he bribed all sorts of professors and administrators at very important universities around the country. And what he would do is he would put together, he'd get these people, and in some cases, they paid up to $500,000 in bribes to get into USC. And USC, I'll tell you about all these schools, that is like the easiest college to get into in Southern California. All these people must have really been hard up to get their kid in college. But this is what he would do. This is what this can be. He set up a nonprofit 501c3 charity. Okay. And that all of these wealthy people, including the two actresses you mentioned, would give a lot of money to these charities, and they would deduct it off their taxes. And then what he would do is he would know all of these coaches. Like, for example, in USC, he knew the coach that was in charge of crew. You guys know what crew is?
It's the rowing, right? With
boats. It was rowing. And so he says, look, I've got this student that we're going to pretend that she's a crew specialist, and because you in the athletic department have so many slots available to fill your crew slots, we will put this person into your crew slot. You'll give them an admission, and we'll give you $150,000 for this person to get admitted. So these gals, they never knew. They never wrote about it in their life.
But I actually, Bill, what's funny is that the father of one of the girls actually took a picture of them on a rowing machine as if they were, you know, practicing for the position.
It didn't get me. But so what happened is they would submit this application, and the application wouldn't be great enough to get scholarships, but it would be good enough for the coach of crew to be able to get this person admitted, and he pocketed $150,000, whatever it was, I don't know the numbers, and then the person got admitted in the school. And then as soon as he got admitted, she would say, oh, I don't want to do crew anymore. Oh, I have an injury, I can't do crew. Because if she turned out one day and was actually trying to rush, you wouldn't know what was going on. Everybody was and the prosecutor in Boston did not file any actions against any of the students. They specifically left the students out because they said that maybe some of the students didn't know about it. But how could the students not know about it? Because the first they got in because of crew, and then they quit immediately. The kids had to know about this scam. But but that was when then USC, I think, was the biggest recipient of this money. You had the soccer coaches. They would get their soccer players in, and it's kind of what you said. This scam artist would Photoshop pictures of these young gals as soccer players, and they'd sit and make a big portfolio. And then he would bribe the number one high school girls soccer, you know, the private soccer collegiate thing over there, to come up with a resume that she was our lead, you know, wingman in soccer, and so she'd get into USC. And then the first day she'd fake an injury, and then she'd get out of it, but she'd still be going to school.
So, Bill, you're a lawyer, so again, I get it. That's not good behavior, but I could see the guy losing his job, obviously, paying back restitution, maybe a fine, but going and arresting these women, you know, and threatening jail time, is it that serious?
There was $27 million that were funneled into this nonprofit organization, for which each contributor, these wealthy people would contribute, they would get tax deductions off of that. So that's a lot of tax fraud.
You're covering your broad money. You're actually getting a tax deduction for bribing people. That's good.
But then on top of that, you read about all of these scandals that take place in China mostly, and some of these people were Chinese, but most of them were white. But in any event, what you'd have is also this scamster. What you do is you go and take ACT and SAT.
He was getting other students to give him the answers or take the test for them.
You go to like a private school, a high school or a community college, and you sit in this big room and you take the ACT test. Well, what he did, he would bribe the people that were monitoring or supervising the ACT test, and then after these kids turned in the ACT test, then he would come in, and one of his smart guys would come in and change all the answers. But they wouldn't change all of the answers to give the guy a Scheller score. They'd use somebody that really knew the ACT and SAT answers. But if the daughter had taken the test before and failed, you can't, second time, you can't get into the super high percentage, because that will draw a flag. So they would tell him just how high of a score you need to get so you can get into USC to study whatever you want to do. So they had this big scam going on. They were paying bribes to the people who put together the ACT and the SAT testing in these local monitors. And so it was a big, extensive scam. Now, there were eight colleges that were indicted. There was USC. I'm sorry, the colleges were not indicted, but they were implicated. Every one of the colleges, if you read all of the colleges.
They know nothing, they see nothing.
Yeah, we
know nothing.
We're victims too, you know. Although our men's water polo team has taken first place every year for the last 15 years, you know. But that wasn't the recruitment. But anyway, it was USC, it was Stanford, it was UCLA, it was University of Texas at Austin, it was Wake Forest, Georgetown, Yale, and the University of San Diego. University of San Diego is a private Catholic school in San Diego. USC is a private Methodist school. And Georgetown, that's a private Catholic school. Some of these are not that difficult to get into. These children of these wealthy people must be real boneheads. They couldn't even. What they could have done, they could have gone to Santa Monica College for 2 years and then transferred to UCLA, you know, and graduated. But no, mom and dad had to pony up $500,000 to get them admitted as a freshman so that they could pretend to play water polo.
Bill, why can't we tap these people who obviously have far more money than brains? We should be having a thriving movement with a huge fundraiser. I mean, there are idiots out there. Well, why won't they give to our cause?
I know. I mean, frankly,
you can't get them into college, Paul. That's why.
Wake Forest is one of these schools on there, and the only thing it's known for is golf. All the famous golfers go there. You know how hard it is to get to Wake Forest. But let me tell you, you mentioned James, two actresses that were involved, and maybe that's high profile, but that is nowhere near the extent of this scandal. One of these guys that had his parents, his kids involved, is named David Hogue. He was one of the, the executives of PIMCO, which is a hedge fund, and they manage $1.6 trillion. And the head of PIMCO got $290 million last year as a bonus in 1 year.
Oh.
And this David Hogue, he's kind of one of the poorest, that he only got $45 million last year as a bonus above his salary. But then you have all of these hedge fund managers, William McGlashan, then you had who heads up another hedge fund. He went to Yale and Stanford as an MBA. What kind of kids does he have that he can't get into school if he's that smart? And then you have Augustin Hunes or something like that. He's a big Napa Valley vineyard. Their wines are sold everywhere. But then get this, the head, the co-chair of a law firm called Wilkie Farr and Gallagher, one of the biggest firms in the nation, and I've dealt with him over the years and times, the co-chair, Mr. Kaplan, he's indicted. And now Wilkie Farr, do you guys know who Wendell Wilkie is?
He was a Republican candidate for president in 44.
Against?
Roosevelt,
that's right.
Wow, Paul.
This was his farm. This is his farm. That's very good.
You're going to call on Jeopardy before Alex Trebek has to retire.
I know.
Maybe I could coach these kids to get into college.
Robert Bork was with Wilkie Farr and Gallagher. Who was Robert Bork, James?
Oh, gosh. Come on. That's a name I should. I do know that name.
Who was it?
The Supreme Court. Was he the lawyer or a justice?
Yeah.
Something?
Yeah. Supreme Court. He was a Supreme Court nominee that didn't get it because I don't know. He was too conservative. But he was a member of Wilkie Farr and Gallagher. And then you have Mario Cuomo or whatever it is. The
he's either Japanese or Italian. I think he's the governor.
The governor of New York. He was there.
Either Japanese or Italian.
This Kaplan guy is the co-chair. You can bet he's going to be disbarred. But in any event, I just think it's amazing. You have all of these super wealthy people that are paying so much money to get their kids in college.
You're onto it now, Bill. I mean, you filled in the blanks. As I was reading this, they were going after the names. I guess most people would know. Most people aren't going to know the names you mentioned, but they would know these actresses because we have such a vapid society. But I was thinking, what I read in one article, $15,000 to get into USC. I mean, you get, like you said, I was like, we're not talking about Harvard Law or MIT or something like that. It's USC. But obviously, it was far greater than what I was reading about, which was just in the entertainment articles. Then you're talking about defrauding the IRS. Now, that goes back to the whole how do they get Capone. It wasn't for any of this mob activities. It was for tax fraud. So that's why the law enforcement is so interested.
I just playing devil's advocate. I haven't read the story. You're up on it, Bill. But when you try to bribe people, how do you do that without having people turning you down and ratting you up to the authorities?
This was a pretty much, from what I understand, Paul, this was like if you knew what to do, they were ready to take your money. It wasn't like they just went up and started knocking on doors bribing. I think there was obviously a setup here, and people who were in the know, they passed along this information. And I mean, is that what you infer, Bill?
Yes, but that's how they got caught. There was one of these wealthy people, we don't know who it was indicted for another issue, an unrelated, maybe a securities fraud, one of these wealthy guys who was going to go to jail for insider trading. And he says, hey, Mr. SEC, Securities and Exchange Commission prosecutor, give me a break. Don't punish me so hard because have I got this. So they wired all these guys up, and they caught one of these guys with the daughter and the father on the phone talking to the scamster, planning everything. And so what it was, it was an unrelated indictment that got everybody captured. So, I forgot to put on silence. I think that thing off. But in any event, I want to segue and bring this down to the issue that we're mostly dealing with, which is the racial issue. And why I wanted to talk about this is because basically most of them were white. Some of them were Jews, some of them were Chinese, but most of them were WASPs. Wealthy, very powerful, vulture capitalists. But this is the situation that I want to talk about. When I came in, I listened to Rush Limbaugh. And I heard the, everyone was showing, playing the press release where the Boston prosecutor was just outlining everything and answering questions. It was intriguing to me. But then I turned to Rush Limbaugh, and this is what he said over and over and over again. He says, it's these white liberals that are doing this, and here they're exercising their white privilege because they're liberals. And he was just going hammering over and over again.
And these white liberal rich parents know full well that is the connection, that is the elite, that's what they want their kid to have access to.
But you know what, Bill? And that is why the so-called conservative movement never wins. They always want to. You know, they don't have any solidarity. I mean, liberal or not, they're white, and I get it. I don't like, you know, left-wing whites either, per se. But when it comes time to close ranks, I mean, let's eat each other to show that you somehow have more virtue than the other people in our own family. That's sick, too.
That's exactly what I was so upset with Rush Limbaugh for hammering on white. When, of course, we know they're white, but they are our criminals. You know, and so you know, we want to help them change, not just treat them as the enemy because they're liberal, because they're left wing. And I was outraged at what he was saying. And you pointed out a good thing, James. And that brings up an affiliated issue. And I talked about this before. What happens when you go to these rallies and you've got these super white Antifa people get beat up by these brown skinned MAGA hat wearers? You know, who do you root for? You know, who do you root against?
Well, I mean, that case is a little more cut and dry, but I mean, there's no doubt about it.
In my mind, I'm thinking, how can you attack our people? You know, he doesn't agree with me, but he's part of my own race. I'm not going to yay and promote our people getting beat up, even though they are diametrically opposed to our viewpoint. But that's a concept. I think we need to realize these are our people. These are our criminals. These are our race trading politicians. Regardless, they are ours, and we have to convert them. And we don't just treat them as the enemy. That's.
I think that's a good point. This is a little bit of a sidebar, but something you mentioned how this unraveled. You probably all know Conrad Black.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, he, in many ways, is a good guy. He's really strong for free speech. He's very, very learned. He does have some blind spots, but we don't have to go into that. But he got into trouble with the U.S. justice system when he was the director of President of Hollinger, which at one point published the Chicago Sun-Times and so on. And he was charged under a very obscure law that's not illegal in Canada, and that is a non-compete clause, which wouldn't mean much to most people. And anyway, he ended up with the best lawyering, with 6 years in federal prison, more appeals than appeals. And I think eventually he served four. Some of the sentences got reduced. But what his observation, he's put it out in a book, is that the American, at least the criminal justice system, is terminally corrupt, that it is not really a matter of a trial. And he claims that something like 98% of the cases are pleaded out, and the, you know, that you're pretty much assured if you go to trial, you'll be convicted. So you're going to be convicted, so let's make a deal. Well, what do you have to offer? And I find it sleazy that some guy under pressure, even if he was a scumbag, I'll make a deal, which means it has nothing to do with his own behavior, much with his own behavior. He's going to rat out people they know about. I think that's sleazy. That's not a justice system.
Well, when at the meeting I went to over the weekend in Tennessee, one guy was talking about, he said, Johnson, have you read the book 3 Felonies a Day? And I said, no. He says, the average American has the potential of committing 3 felonies a day because there's so many darn laws on the books, you know? And he just gave an example. For example, what happens if you are, you're supposed to, you know, you're at a national park, and you clean up stuff, and you leave, you know, you leave a Dixie cup on the table, and you go up there and you're approached by a ranger, and the ranger says, well, did you clean up your stuff? Yes, sir, we cleaned it up, but you left a Dixie cup behind. Well, that's a felony right there, lying to a federal officer. You know? And so you go to jail for 15 years for that Dixie cup. And he was just, example after example, there's so many laws out there that you can get convicted of.
About 20 years ago, I think these were mostly libertarians, but there was an idea that was floated on both sides of the border that every law should have a sunset, and that every law should be reviewed every 5 years, and all the regulations, then because, you know, we are just choking on both sides of the border with laws and regulations and so on. To be law-abiding is very difficult unless you've got a lawyer constantly by your side, but country should be.
Y'all are right. I mean, there's so many laws. I think about that all the time. You never know if you're breaking a law. You're always breaking a law. But it's like cafeteria Christians, where you pick and choose which parts of the Bible you want to live by. And of course, we have that style of government where they pick and choose which laws to enforce. I can think of some pretty glaring laws that they don't enforce at all. And a lot of them take place around the border, if you know what I'm talking about. So,
Yeah, for example, had they decided to go after everybody in the Obama administration like they went after everybody in the Trump administration, they would probably get just as many.
That's right.
Or more, but they only selectively went after the Trump people. And so, yeah, that's the way it is. But like, you know, another example is this, for committing 3 felonies a day. They said that there was an importer who imported seafood, and the law that they imported from, you're not supposed to import them in plastic, it's supposed to be in boxes. And they imported some lobster in plastic, and this violated the law of Costa Rica or whatever it was. So they didn't know about it. It wasn't against the law in the United States. Well, because you're violating a foreign law, that's another violation of an American law, and this guy got charged. So you don't even know what these laws are, and you just get taken in, and it's selective enforcement, like you say. But before we get into these, I thought I'd put this on.
All your fans, Bill.
Yeah, I got it. Okay, I'm sorry. I got to put this on.
It's the College Admissions Board at
all of my kids are in Christian school. The tuition for all of them together for all 4 years is less than I paid for one semester at an Ivy League school. So, you know.
Oh, my gosh.
But in any event, before we go on, you mentioned something about this indictment of Black, Conrad Black. I want to know, and I never asked a Canadian, what about this Ford guy? I think he's dead now, right? The blonde-haired, fat, overweight guy from Canada?
He's from there, yeah. Out of Toronto.
Yeah. What about him? Was he one of us? Because he sure was fighting everybody all the time.
I know the Ford family, not closely. It's not nice to gossip on the air, but some of the members of the family are being a little closer to the white nationalist movement than I'm sure they would ever admit. I think they have good instincts. They came from the same part of Etobicoke or West Toronto that I did, only they came from a richer area. He had good gut instincts. Like, there's city council proclaimed Gay Pride Week or month, and then there was a special day for the gays and lesbians who'd suffered, but he wouldn't go to those events. And the politicians were under a lot of pressure to go to the annual Herbert Pride Parade, and he wouldn't. He said, well, that's my vacation, that's my weekend with my family. And look, you know, he had flaws, but he had a good instinct.
Did he die from cocaine abuse?
No, he died of a very rare form of cancer. It was very, really virulent, very painful. And he was, I believe he was only 44. I mean, he served one term. He was going to run for the second term, but then he got so sick, his brother replaced him. The brother is now Premier of Ontario. He's a pretty good populist, the new Premier. No, it's really tragic. Ford did have, Ralph Ford did have a lot of demons, alcohol, particularly drugs, was one of them.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on. James, you had a topic that you wanted to talk about, I guess. I think it was the attack on Tucker Carlson.
Yeah, so basically what's going on here, now this is very, very big news. You know how it is, Bill. You've got these radical left-wing organizations who basically get paid very nice salaries, and they're very well-staffed, just to sit and listen to every broadcast they don't like. And they will listen to every minute of every show. They used to transcribe a lot of my radio programs back some years ago, and we still get some play with Media Matters from time to time, but there's so many other shows out there now. They're ubiquitous on YouTube, so there's a lot of other people they got to watch, I guess. They've attacked me for so many years, and I'm still here. I mean, what are you going to do? But, Tucker Carlson, now they had some researcher who went back 13 years ago to 2006 and found some obscure radio program I'd never heard of before. I mean, maybe it wasn't obscure, but either way, I haven't heard of it. When I don't think it's still on the air.
Oh, what's it called? I think I had heard of it. Do you remember what it was called?
Bubba the Love Sponge.
Oh, yes, I had heard of that, yeah.
Well, that was, it's sort of like a shock jock, you know, poor man's Howard Stern, maybe something like that.
Yeah, I think so.
But anyway, so they found some interviews that he gave to that particular broadcast 13 years ago, and of course, as they always do, they transcribe it, and then they post it, and, I did a series of tweets about this. Well, first of all, they were saying that, you know, he was attacking women. Basically, Tucker had said in this broadcast, just one example. Now, there's a couple of dozen clips that they transcribed now, and each of them is supposed to be another shot at Tucker Carlson. But what they were trying to make hay with early, you know, Tucker I'll tell you why they really hate Tucker Carlson. I found a picture of his family. He has a beautiful family. He has four beautiful white children and obviously a nice-looking blonde wife, and that's why they hate him. He is, and for better or worse, he is a traditionalist. He is probably, a classic nuclear family here. A mom and a dad that are married, the dad works, they've got kids, the kids look happy. They don't like that. But they found something that he said about women, saying that the women can smell fear on a man, they're like dogs, women need strong men, and they despise weak men. I mean, all of that's true. I mean, that's guy talk. That's true. Women don't like weak men. They want to have a strong man in their life. There were some things he said in jest, for instance, when girls go to college, they experiment in the dorm room. But the shock jock was presenting to him the situation, saying, you know, when girls get away from their parents, they experiment sexually with other girls in college. And Tucker was like, well, that sounds good to me as long as it's not my daughter. And then the media's calling him a pervert for that. And I'm thinking, well, you know, this is the same media that promotes incessantly every perversion imaginable up into and including this very popular, well, I don't know how popular it is, but it's a prime time show they shovel down your throat on TLC about this teenage boy who pretends to be a girl and he mutilated himself and, genital mutilation, and they present that as it's natural and healthy, and man, this is glamorous. So the audacity of the media to call Tucker Carlson a pervert, for some of these comments he made, absolutely ridiculous. And he said some other things that they didn't like about how racism really doesn't exist anymore. And, he said some things about whites building civilization. For all of us, it would be very benign stuff, but, they're trying to get him fired from Fox, or at least to have his, advertising starting now.
I hope he'll take a very aggressive response. And if they want to focus on the whites built civilization comment, I think he should be tossed right back. But is that not true? If it's wrong, correct me. But if that's not true, then get off my case. I think in general, Trump handles criticism, and they sure toss a lot at him very well. In that he's very aggressive and non-apologetic. you know you're on a downward spiral if he starts saying, "Oh, those were I was young and foolish. I don't really believe those things today. I'm sorry. I hope I didn't offend anybody. I've never offended anybody. Some of my best friends are transsexuals, or the usual long list of." And the thing is, it doesn't work. Doesn't work. The only Field Marshal Rommel taught us this. The only thing that works is a head-on assault.
Well, Paul. Well, we've all been through this. I mean, we're all such veterans here, the four of us. So anything Tucker Carlson said in these clips, I mean, it wouldn't have, made any of us blush. And none of it was really over the top. I mean, some of the things he said in jest, some of it was just tongue-in-cheek comments, but none of it was really offensive to anybody that's mentally sound. But to his credit, and I have said this for, my motto on the radio for the last 15 years has always been no retreat, no surrender, no apologies. Like you said, to Tucker Carlson's credit, this was his statement. This was his full statement in response to all of this. Media Matters caught me saying something naughty on a radio show more than a decade ago. Rather than express the usual ritual contrition, how about this? I'm on TV every weeknight for an hour. You want to know what I think? You can watch. Anyone who disagrees with my views is welcome to come on and explain why. So no apology. And he says he doubled down on his first show back on the air. All of this broke over the weekend. I haven't even had a chance to cover it on my show. I think it actually broke on Sunday. And he said on Monday night, his first show back, that he's not going to bow to the mob.
Excellent. That's the right approach. And courage is infectious, and cowardice is also infectious.
That's right. Good point.
If enough people say, "Show off, those are my views," or "Those were my views," if you don't like them, don't listen. But you're not going to ruin me or make me into a pariah because you don't like it. And I've noticed. I think I mentioned this before. But when Donald Trump got elected president of the United States, little rebellions started happening across Canada on immigration. People would be too afraid to put out a pamphlet or do something, 6 months before, ever since have been activated. And I absolutely know, because I've talked to some of these people who didn't have any real involvements in the movement before, but in their head, what they're thinking is, "Oh man, I know I'm going to be called a racist. It's not fair, but that's what will happen. But maybe being called a racist isn't quite so bad if you have the President of the United States is a racist," or at least that's what they say.
I gotta take a moment and thank Art and the chat group for the £5 donation, which is about $6.50.
Very good, very good. Well, yeah. I remember when I was growing up, our town had two television stations. We had two channels, ABC and NBC. We didn't even have CBS. And I remember when color TV first came out, and we didn't have it toward color TV, but they started broadcasting on TV. But in addition, they came out with what's called TV dinners. And my folks brought some TV dinners that you could buy, and you could put them out. You had to put TV trays. Let's eat TV dinners in front of the TV. Well, those TV dinners were made by Swanson. And I believe Swanson TV dinner, or Swanson Foods, is Tucker Carlson's mother. Tucker Carlson is from the Swanson food people. So if he loses all the advertisers, at least he can still get the Swanson advertisers.
This is the thing. How much money is enough for you to have security and enough to have a little courage? Now, Tucker Carlson would have another 30 years in TV.
Yeah.
Relatively young guy. He's probably not much. He couldn't be much older than me. But I tell you, if you're not familiar with the story, just do a Google News search for the words Tucker Carlson. The Washington Post right now, there's hundreds of articles out about this. Tucker Carlson needs to go, period, now, period. And that's the thing. They're going to go out. I mean, they very well could push him out, no matter what, an apology wouldn't absolve him of that. If he is going to go down, he needs to go down with his integrity and his self-worth intact.
The bottom line is censorship. They just want to shut us up.
Yeah.
What offends people, of course, changes literally by the day. I mean, what he said in 2006 may not have been offensive even to liberals. But of course, you know, that line's always redrawn from pointing out that white people really can't do anything. Just shut up and apologize, and that's all they want you to do.
Yeah, I can't think of anything he said that was offensive.
I read only one article, and the article highlighted only one statement. And that statement was, he says, well, child marriage is bad, but it is not as bad, it's not the same equivalent of someone coming in and grabbing your daughter and taking her rape. And that was what they focused in on. And so you can't even make comparisons anymore.
Here's the thing too, Bill, as just technically speaking, now I'm not saying, in the case he was talking about specifically involved a 27-year-old man and a 16-year-old girl that I guess got married, but that's probably a little bit of, you know, I don't think an 11-year age gap is necessarily bad. You know, if the girl's 21, but, you know, the guy's 32, something like that, that's actually probably even more healthy and stable. 27 to 16, yeah, I can see. But I can see that, you know, not, you know, being something that would bother people. But in some states, still to this day, 16 is the age of consent. In fact, there are several states where 16 and not 18 is the age of consent. So what if these people were in a state like that?
I think it's also cultural. If I'm not mistaken, country and western singer Loretta Lynn was married at 13.
But back then, of course, that was a whole different age, and of course, even in the age prior to that, women were women in their mid-teens and late teens. I mean, you were every bit a mature and responsible woman. Now, what we have now is people live to be 80 years old, and they still have a childlike mentality.
Well, when I was 12 years old, I would visit as the church, the home teaching, and I visited an old woman by the name of Minnie Shemp, and she said to me, Billy, how old are you? I'm 12. She says, when I was 12, I got married.
Yeah. Well, we laugh about it now. I mean, we keep an eye on that now.
Back then, we were the only, you know, we were out in the plains, and there was a little small town, no one around there, and I got married when I was 12, and you know how old my husband was? I said, no, he was 45. But she was widowed. He was widowed, but she stayed married with him, you know, and I was shocked at 12 years old, but it's like you say, it's different eras, different times.
And I mean, you know, and if she'd have been what if she was 16 and, you know, 11 months, so then, you know, you're literally 12 months away from being totally legal. I mean, I get it. You know, 16 might be young now, especially as degenerate as our society is. But this is the whole thing. I mean, this is what they've got to go on. And again, he's making a comparison here that we're focusing on different ages, and in some states, 16 is legal, and all of that is true. But all of the stuff they had on Tucker, I mean, they didn't get him with a smoking gun. He didn't say the dreaded N-word, you know, which is a death sentence now for a wife. He didn't do any of that.
Why are these people not complaining about Muslims? They do this stuff all the time. You know, they get away with it. If it's a moral imperative, they should be coming down, bearing down hard upon Muslims.
See, mainstream media is losing viewership right and left. But the most tragic thing, if Tucker Carlson gets kicked off of Fox, is that he has the ear of the president. President Trump quotes him a lot. So if he goes, we're going to lose one of our best lobbying efforts right there. So we'll see how it transpires.
All our listeners should, you know, in the category of things you can do, why don't you tap off an email or make a phone call to Fox News today or tomorrow and say, I'm for Tucker Carlson, you keep him, he's the best you've got.
That's true.
It's fine for us to talk back and forth, but hey, that's something you folks in the United States can do.
Right, we should say, I'm a white nationalist and I support Tucker Carlson. we'll see what happens. Let's go on to the topics that Ken gave up. The very first one, international studies, Sweden insecurity escalating. So Ken, can you tell us what that one's all about?
The challenge, I think everybody understands with Sweden, is they have this onslaught of mass, what they call immigration. We all call it invasion because it's what it is. But it's having an effect on their culture, which is a surprise. But it's being reported now by an international study. Now, granted, Sweden still has one of the highest quality, its ranking is one of the highest quality of life nations on the planet. But this is what we read from a Swedish newspaper, and this is a Google translation. By the way, is my audio cracking up still?
No, yeah, you're good. Better.
All right. The independent organization World Justice Project warns in this year's edition of its Rule of Law report on the situation in Sweden regarding law and order, legal certainty, and security for citizens. Sweden is ranked in this respect as worse than other Nordic countries. Now, by the way, it's ranked number four, but it was, I think it was number five. So it's slipping, or it's the other way around. It was four, now it's five. By the way, the United States is, where is it, number 19. But the point is, the quality of life is degrading in these countries that have open border policies.
Yeah, it's amazing to me that the descendants of the Vikings are really among the most cupped group of subset of whites that we've got. I just can't for the life of me understand why it was the Norwegians and the Swedish and the Danes that are really worse off than any other group of whites as far as this whole thing goes. I mean, women in Sweden can't hardly go out without getting raped. I think more people are becoming aware of the problem there than perhaps a few years ago, but they are just flooding Sweden with you know the worst of the worst of the third world. And I, speaking of Sweden, I was on a Warner Brothers produced TV show that aired on the SVT network in Sweden, which is their biggest television network, tens of millions of viewers, and it was a popular show. And of course, I was cast to be the bad guy in this show. But they paired me with two Swedish pop stars. I guess it would be like the Britney Spears and Jennifer Lopez, something like, you know, the equivalent. I didn't know who they were. But they're two starlets over in Sweden. And they're self-described feminists. And I got a screenshot. Now, they were a little feisty at first. But I've got this screenshot. I actually just posted it again to my Twitter account. You can see their faces soften. And they start running their fingers through their hair. And they're smiling, you know, if you present them with a little bit of masculine authority. And the point is, all of the stuff that's wrong with Sweden, really everything that's wrong with the Western world, can be put at the feet of one group of people. And it's not the Jews, and it's not blacks, it's white men. White men are the reason Sweden is the way it is today. White men are the reason America is the way it is today. White men need to step up and be men again and tell the truth and go out and protect their people. If you don't, every degeneracy we've got could have been stopped if our people had held the line. And I know it's easy to just, you know, to become complacent and have the beer and the TV and the paycheck coming in, and that's really why we are where we are. We've become decadent and we've become lazy.
I may have a confession to make. The reason why Sweden is like it is because of my ancestors. We went over to Sweden and Scandinavia and Norway and preaching the gospel of my church, and we converted all of the religious ones, and we brought them all over the United States. All, you know, my wife is Norwegian, and all these religious ones came over, converted because they had religious fervor, and we left behind all of the cuckable secular people. So it is my ancestors and my buddies that destroyed Sweden. Sorry,
I think. I don't know if it's genetic, that maybe over 1,000 years the energy in the blood runs out. But certainly the Swedes that I know, the Swedes of today, are not the manly, adventurous conquerors that our ancestors were. I was in Sweden 30 years ago at an anti-communist conference, and I met people supposedly from the Swedish army. My God. The Russians don't have anything to fear from them. Now, you know, granted, that's anecdotal, and I'm sure there are good ones too, and there are a lot of good things about Sweden, but certainly the moral leadership is corrupt to the absolute core.
Well, yeah, and also you have the invaders, the non-white invaders, are taking advantage of this. There's been a video that was posted online, just I saw it today, where you have this big old black guy in Sweden. He wants to sit down on a train or a bus or whatever, and there's an old elderly Swedish woman sitting there, and she's sitting on the outside seat of the aisle of the inside seat. And he comes up there and he punches the glass backboard as hard as he can, because he thinks that she's blocking him from sitting down. So another white lady, not a black guy, another white Swedish lady gets up and helps this old lady off so this black guy can have the seat all by himself, and he's not satisfied there, so he punches the glass backboard again and sits down as angry as could be because this old lady didn't get up and give her his seat to him. It's just outrageous.
We've got a Swedish guy in the chat group, and he says, no, white women are the problem. He says white men gave him freedom, and that was the end.
Okay, ask him how many kids he has. Is he married, and does he have children? He's the problem. How many kids do you have?
When I was in Sweden, and this is before the big invasion, walking around some of the cafes in Stockholm, there I would see gorgeous blonde Swedish women. I mean, they really are beautiful people.
And they still are beautiful, but...
And who was with them? Some swarthy South European, probably a Muslim from the Balkans or Turkey, a foot shorter than the
but,
women.
What's wrong with you, woman? Well, I'll tell you. That whatever he was... rose to the occasion and went up and aggressively pursued her. And they will fall in line to, again, this masculine authority. I've got a good friend in Germany, and she tells me that, she can't go to a place, you know, where you would typically meet people. She said German men will not approach a woman. She said they will sit on their hands. It doesn't matter if they're giving signals. She said German men will absolutely are just completely shut down. I don't know if it's the whole thing of white guilt or whatever the case may be, but if we don't have enough pride in our genes to go out and take a woman, I mean, how are we ever going to restore order in the world if we can't even reproduce? If we're too passive to protect.
My informants tell me the same thing. These are women in Toronto who tell me about the Caribbean Negroes, and they say, white men, you know, they're either too shy, or maybe they're gay, but they don't want to talk to you. Whereas on an elevator, some Caribbean Negro will start saying, hey, looking good, baby. Oh, well, you know, baby.
Right.
They'll talk to a woman.
Because it's still, for all the problems you have between the sexes, women, you know, quite rightly, shouldn't be the ones aggressively pursuing the men. So if you've got this otherwise good-looking, strapping, you know, young German man, it's not the woman's job to go over there and seduce him. That's the man's job.
Well, don't you guys?
So, you know, they're not going to do that. I mean, yeah, perhaps, you know, as a rule, the white woman wouldn't want to be with somebody like you're describing, but they're going to fall in line. I mean, there are things. It's almost as if they can't help it. I mean, they are triggered. By certain ways you can trigger a woman, and everything else falls in line, and so they're going to go with the aggressive, dominant male. And
don't you guys think the fake feminists are complicit in this? If a white man is aggressive, then that's not chivalry, that's chauvinism. That's the patriarchy exerting itself. We got to beat these guys down. That's part of the
But even the feminists don't really believe that. I look at this picture I've got with these two feminists right there. I mean, you can't see it, obviously, but what I'm saying is they fall in line, too. I mean, it's biological.
The feminists believe it.
The men believe they believe it and want to play by these rules, but even these radical feminists, they're going to fall in line to an alpha male.
Yeah. We need to wake up. Now, this brings up some historical questions. We've had invasions in the past in Europe. We had invasions by the Golden Horde of Genghis Khan. We had the Muslims invasion, and that lasted for centuries. How did the peasants react to that invasion? Did they welcome them with open arms like we're doing now, or were they upset too? How did it happen, and what caused the Charles Martels of the world to finally gain traction and kick these people out?
Well, it seems to me, Bill, that the Nordic countries are intentionally targeted because they tend to be the apex of white civilization. So they want to go for the very heart. But I think it's a different type of warfare. It's not like these hordes are coming in on horses with spears and bows and arrows. This is psychological warfare. They're invading our universities. They're invading the media. And they come in, it's a Trojan horse strategy. And they're getting it inside our heads. It's a total different type of warfare.
What happened? Do you guys know what happened? How did the peasants react when there was that invasion back then? Did they fight it? Did they accept it? Did they just, I mean, if you look at Spain, it looked like they accepted it. You know, you have all these Muslim Arabic words like Alhambra, all the Al's and the L's, that's all come from their language. And you look at their people, they're all dark. So did they just say, okay, come in, we'll marry you, and you know, and then it's the end of the civilization. Do you guys know?
Well, I don't know exactly how the rank and file peasant reacted, you know, during the age of Charles Martel and, you know, John Sobieski and all of these other great kings of Europe. Who was the other one? Charlemagne, you know, all of them that repelled the Muslim menace. I mean, enough of them did, though, to where we could stave off the threat. And of course, that's true of any war, I guess. I mean, the bulk of the population doesn't fight, but enough of them do to stem the tide and turn the tide. So, you know, at least enough of them did. I don't know if we'd have that many people that would do it today, that's for sure. And like Kim makes a good point, it is a different kind of war. But at least Charles Martel and all these people weren't affected with this, you know, cult of political correctness where literally wanting to survive, defending your own people and your own land is a sin now.
Yeah, back then, and until, you know, very, very recently, you didn't have to apologize for nationalism. Nobody thought diversity was our greatest strength. And weak as they might be, a group or a tribe would want to keep themselves whole and not be taken over and invaded. I don't think there was much of a sentiment in Europe, in the lands like Hungary and the Balkans, Romania, where these people, the Muslims, invaded over 1,000 years. Oh, gee, diversity could be our greatest strength. Let's welcome them. They're our brothers. I'll tell you who is a real hero. And you have to forget all the nonsense in the horror movies. The Romanian leader, Vlad the Impaler.
Yeah.
Muslims. And he stopped them brutally because that's the only thing the Turks understood. He's a hero in Romania. He may be kind of a Dracula, you know, figure in somewhere in Western cinema. But that was the type of people. Those are the type of men who stopped them. And they didn't think for one moment that maybe if we brought in some Turks, diversity would be the beginnings of a greater economy. We need immigration to grow the economy, or any of that. That's the delusions that are now common. And
okay. They all defended the faith, they all defended their people, they all defended their land.
Yes.
Yeah. Charlemagne, I think in French, means Charles the Great.
Yes.
And Charles Martel was Charles the Hammer. So, Paul, do we want James Edwards to be James Edwards the Great, James Edwards the Hammer, or James Edwards the Impaler? Which are we going to do?
I think...
all good names.
Long-pointed stakes along the Mexican border, never mind the wall, that, you know, if you get over, we're going to put you on the stage, you're going to make a tamale shish kebab. Now, it's your choice.
We need to get behind one leader that'll lead us forward. So James, that's up to you. If you got everybody to get behind you, and we got to either use a hammer or something to make these changes.
That's the key right there, deciding if it's going to be the hammer or the impaler. You know, go the wrong way and it all falls apart. But
why can't you do both? Be a hammer and the impaler.
Or be an impaler with a hammer. You know.
And it's better than mining the border, because mine might kill the occasional jackrabbit.
We don't want to do any of that. You know, that secretive stuff. That, you know, we don't want to obfuscate. We don't want to hide our weapons. We want to have them right there in our hand. But Paul, you mentioned something.
Well, this is Paul Froman. You're on the Fighting Side of Me. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. Shows repeated 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. Good night.